Welcome to the Venus Index Podcast. I'm John Barbman, and with me is Suzanne McKenzie. How do people refer to you? Just Susie or Suzanne?
Susie is fine.
Okay. And Susie, if you're listening on iTunes, bounce over to venusindex.com and check out her pictures. She came fifth in our open contest, and we were just discussing about taking after pictures, and you did a really good job with your after pictures. And I've also... I haven't said it yet, so I guess I'll disclose it here, that in this round of interviews compared to the last round or what I've done in the past, I've had kind of a standard format. But this time, I don't know who started this. I think Tanya actually, or Jason Gottlieb, started this by asking in the forums what everyone else wants to hear. So, and you mentioned you did that too. So let's just jump into that if you want, and then we'll just sort of see where we end up.
Okay. Well, one of the things that people said they wanted to hear about was the barriers and how you overcome them. So I think if you want, we can talk about that. And I think for me, the biggest barrier was having patience, really. I think my expectation through previous programs or through the media or whatever is that you make a transformation really quickly. And actually, what was a real barrier for me was realizing that these things take so much time, much more time than you think. And I know you've talked previously about taking at least kind of two contests to get where you want to get. And I think that's probably about right. So I think the biggest barrier for me, and I think for lots of people, is that you expect results almost instantly or within a couple of weeks. And I think for me, I had to be really very realistic about both fat loss and muscle gain. And I think for me, the fat loss bit came easier, whereas the muscle gain was and is a much, much harder job. So I think the first barrier I had was really getting a sense of, well, you know, you need to be realistic, you need to take time of this, and you've got to not expect instant results. And I think attached to that is this fixation with the scale and scale weight. And for me, the scale didn't change at all in 3 months. Although the pictures have changed. And so I think, again, one of the barriers is this kind of fixation with scale numbers. And I think it's really trying to just use that as a kind of data point. Well, I weigh this, and yesterday I weighed that, and next week I'll weigh something different. But it's telling you something, but it's not telling you everything, because my pictures are quite different in 3 months, but the poundage is exactly the same. So I think it's just being realistic about what you can change and what is important and what isn't in terms of measurements and what they tell you. So I think that was my first big barrier.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty important about I just finished talking to a few other people who actually just didn't bother weighing themselves at all for the entire contest because it was driving them nuts if their weight changed a pound the wrong direction, and that's going to make you feel lousy if you put the effort in, then all of a sudden this one particular measurement endpoint isn't going the direction you feel like you put the effort to make it go. And then, I mean, I can see how that would drive you crazy. So some people just didn't touch this. They touched it the first day and then the last day and nowhere in between because they knew it was going to cause them trouble.
And that's really, really sensible. And I wish I'd done that because I moaned and moaned and moaned on the blogs about, oh, my weight's not changing. Well, it didn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is the whole body recomposition thing. And so I think it's realizing that and really trying to get those numbers out of your head, the poundage numbers anyway. And really they're a bit of information, but they're not everything. They don't tell you anything particularly significant or not as significant as you think. So I think that's the thing to ditch. And I think linked to that really is the whole idea about food. And I think that was the biggest barrier for me. And that was a kind of psychological one that you have to realize how much less you have to eat. And Naomi did a post about this, about, you know, where's my 2000 calories gone? And again, in your head, you have this kind of idea as a woman that you've got the 2000 calories. And really, even for someone, I'm quite tall, 2000 is still too much. And it was a really hard lesson for me to actually learn that you really don't need all that food. And it was a big shock to me how low I had to go in terms of calories and in terms of food to actually hit anywhere near BI. And actually to realize that you actually don't really need that much food. And and how much your appetite will change, and how much your kind of the way you see food will change as well. So I think, again, that was a huge psychological and physical barrier for me, that actually learning to see foods in a different way, which was completely different to all the stuff I'd been fed before, you know, literally about, you know, the 1200 calories minimum for women, etc., etc. And you just take that in because that's what is out there. So you're kind of related to that, the barrier of all this information or misinformation that you're trying to kind of fight against. And when I came to Venus, I was just so confused about everything. You know, I'd read everything and listened to everything and seen all these different programs, and I was just full of all this stuff in my head. And that was a huge barrier, actually trying to get past all of that and actually look at, well, what is the truth as far as we know, and what is the real picture. So that was an enormous barrier. I think it's kind of information overload, really. So I was completely had this real analysis paralysis by the time I got to VI, because I just thought, I've just had enough of all this. You know, where do I go now?
And you spoke about seeing food differently. What do you mean by that?
I think trying to realize that you don't actually have to eat. You don't have to eat 6 meals a day. You don't have to eat 5 meals a day. You don't have to eat 3 meals a day. You don't have to snack. You know, you can eat when you're hungry. You can eat small portions. You don't have to finish your plates. You can throw food away. You don't have to eat something because somebody's given it to you. So my whole kind of perception of the amount and the way that I ate completely changed. And now I leave food, which I'd never done before. I mean, I was brought up, as I'm sure most people are, to, you know, you've got to clean your plates. And now I just, the way I see food has really, really changed, that it's about getting in touch with what your body wants and needs, not when you should eat, when you want to eat. I mean, a classic example is, I was always a big believer that you have to eat breakfast. It's the most important meal of the day. And my husband does not eat breakfast, and I would nag him for years, you must eat breakfast. And actually, no, you mustn't eat breakfast. You don't have to. If you want to, it's fine. And breakfast is gone now for me. Lunch sometimes is gone, you know, because I'm just not hungry. So my whole way of looking at what I can, should, want to eat has really completely changed. And that's been a huge revelation, that you don't have to fit any set pattern that someone else out there has laid down for you, thinks you should eat. And that is incredibly liberating, really. It's been.
Did you feel like you were doing something wrong by doing this, or did you jump? Were you skeptical about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the whole metabolism thing. You think you're breaking your metabolism, and my metabolism was suddenly going to slow down, and I was suddenly going to completely crash. And that didn't happen at all, because, I mean, things were changing. And, you know, you can see this from lots of people who've had fantastic results through this process, that, you know, your body will change and can change and doesn't seize up or whatever. And so, yeah, I was kind of worried about it, sort of frightened about it, because you read so much about your metabolism breaking and all the rest of it. But when you actually read the research and think about it, you realise that there's very little substantial evidence towards that, and I certainly haven't found that at all. So, again, you're fighting all this stuff. I mean, I had a friend of mine saying, you know, oh, you've got to eat in surplus if you want to build muscle. You've got to be eating about 2,500 calories. And I just thought, oh, no. So, you know, you're actually fighting all of this other information out there as well about metabolism, muscle building, what you have to do and must do. And it is quite hard to actually abandon those previous ways of thinking, because they are so become so embedded in your head that you think that you must be wrong, but no. And that's been very liberating as well, to actually say, you know, these gurus, whoever they are, you know, are not always right by any means.
Well, yeah, no kidding. And then so as far as your transformation, this was, like, you said the word recomposition earlier, and that's basically what you did here. Mm. And on top of that, patience.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing isn't, I don't think people realize, well, maybe they do realize, fat loss is like, for someone who needs to lose 20 pounds, they can do that pretty quickly, and it shows up real good in pictures. But for what you're doing, it does really require patience, because you have to just trust along the way that recomposition is actually happening. Like, when did you start realizing that this is working as long as I stay on the course?
Oh, that's a very good question. I would say fairly late on, because my blog was just full of whinging that nothing's changing, and people are saying to me, yes, it is, it is. And actually, it was only about week 8, 9, 10 of the contest I started to think, hang on, something's changing. And that's the one thing I would say is really helpful in overcoming that barrier is taking pictures. And if you can, it's a pain to take them weekly, but if you can, take them weekly, because that's when you see the change. And it may well take 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks or whatever, but you will see it suddenly. And you go, oh yes, actually, this is working. And that was really a real lesson to me, actually, that things are changing, even if the scale doesn't change or the tape measure doesn't change. You can get body recomposition going. And when you get to a certain level, it is slow and it is really hard and it is inch by inch. And I think you have to really... it sounds a bit harsh, but you have to kind of stop moaning about it. And I mean, I'm talking to myself here, really. You've got to just accept that when you get to a certain level, it is really hard and slow and incremental, and you're not going to get the 20-pound loss or, you know, even a pound loss most times. But, you know, it just takes a lot longer than you think, and it's harder than you think. And I think you can moan about it all day, and I do moan about it and have moaned about it, but there does come a point where you go, oh God, it really has changed. And so you have to really just keep at it and believe you can do it and keep faith in it, because it will happen. I mean, it has happened for people. You just have to absolutely stick it out, and that's not easy, but I think it's really the only way. And I think it's the one thing above anything I've learned is to have patience and to really accept that it takes time, and you just have to kind of suck it up, to use an American expression. You have to just accept that process is going to take time.
Yeah, Eric, I don't know if you listen to Eric's podcast, but his thing is, I don't know if he says it in part one or part two, but he says, expect it and accept it. Mm. So just expect the time it's going to take and then accept it. And then once you have that mindset, you can kind of, I don't want to go as far as to say you can enjoy the process, but you can, you know, just be in the process and just get the fact that it is a process. Because a lot of girls who are going to lose a lot are going to have to, and then are going to lose weight, are going to get to the point where they're, now I've lost the weight, but they might realize they need to do some recomposition, some muscle building, and they might be shocked when the weight loss happens so quickly, but the recomposition happens so slowly. And then, you know, being like, well, how did I lose 25 pounds in 3 months, but now I can't even, you know, gained a pound of muscle, or I can't really, like, recompositions, you have to get used to the fact that that rate is just a different rate. Mm. And I'm glad that you're pointing this out, that you have to, that was your biggest barrier, because it's going to be a barrier for somebody else too. So hearing you explain that, I think is really important.
Well, I hope so, because I mean, it was incredibly frustrating for me, because I started VI in March and I lost about 13, 14 pounds really quickly. And then since the contest started, as I said, I lost nothing in terms of poundage, but the recomposition was happening, but happening very slowly. And I think that is the biggest lesson for me, and I haven't really quite absorbed it yet, that you have to kind of sort of enjoy being in the process and go through the process and live within the process, and not expect it to be quick, and accept that it's going to take time. So I think Eric's right in that sense. It doesn't make it any easier, I don't think, but it helps you be a bit more at peace, because you can't expect muscle building to be quick. And I think that was my biggest mistake, I think. I think I thought I could build muscle really quickly on my shoulders, on my butt, you know, and I'd be at VI really quickly. And then you suddenly realise, no, actually, muscle building is really difficult. And I really did not realise that. And I think fat loss for me, anyway, and I think, I guess, for a lot of people, is a lot easier. And I think I certainly underestimated how difficult muscle building and recomposition would be. But it does take time. But, yeah, you have to expect that and accept it. But not easy.
I hope we're not scaring women away that like, well, I mean, think about what we're saying. We're saying the fat loss part's easy. Like, no, very few people are going to actually even think that that's true. Like, that fat loss is easy and quick, and then you just wait. The hard part comes next. It's the muscle building.
Sorry, it's all relative.
No, well, but you see where we're. It's true, and I guess we're just. This is a tough one to accept, but believe. I mean, a lot of people can knock off a lot of weight in a pretty short period of time.
Yeah,
but, man,
once it comes time to building muscle, we gotta. You've got to have like a more of a. See, you can have a month, a 3, 4, 5, 6 month horizon in your mind on fat loss. Mm. You need a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 year horizon for muscle building. That's actually how you have to switch that thought.
Yeah, and that was very, very hard for me to accept, and still is. But I'm getting there.
I mean, and you did well. You did well. And if there's room to go, you can get there. It's just now it's not going to be something measured in weeks and months. It's going to be measured a bit longer than that.
Yeah.
So as far as food goes, what did you do this time around?
Food. Food is always a tricky one for me because I'm vegetarian, so I don't eat meat or fish. So my protein intake has always been a real problem. So I had to really think about that, and I didn't do a particularly good job in terms of protein. I mean, I don't really think about macros, to be honest. But I mean, that is a bit of a concern for me in terms of muscle building in particular. But for me, it wasn't so much what I was eating, although I did drastically cut calories. I mean, I must have been probably eating beforehand well over 2,000 calories. I mean, I wasn't logging, I wasn't really tracking. I just thought, oh well, I'm kind of about 2,000. I probably wasn't. I was probably nearer 3,000, I'm guessing, which was far too much. And then when I was listening to all the podcasts, reading ESCE, AGD, and all of that, and I started to realise that I didn't need all that food and I didn't actually really want it, then I really made a plan based on BMR, etc. in terms of calorie intake, and I did start logging. I had this kind of, like Kimberly, I had this, or not as good as hers, but an Excel spreadsheet where I put everything on and logged everything. And that was actually really helpful in looking at the numbers, and I tried to stick around a ballpark figure. But I think it wasn't so much, well, related to that, actually. It's more about the kind of psychological aspects of it, of the changing the approach to food, and just simple things like having trigger foods just out of the house, just don't have them in the house, which is quite difficult when you've got a two-year-old, but just not having that stuff in there. You know, I think it's partly knowing what sets you off. I think you have to be honest with yourself and say, well, no, if I have that chocolate in the house, I'm not really going to eat half, I'm going to finish the whole thing, so it's best just don't have it in. So I think it's, as well as logging and doing the maths on it, it's also knowing your own psychological triggers and vulnerabilities and trying to have strategies to deal with those. And also, I had to kind of get over my kind of prejudices about fasting, because anything I knew about fasting, well, I didn't know anything about fasting, was I just thought, well, this is really strange. What is this fasting business? But when I actually read more about it and was reading more on the blogs about what people were doing, it became part of what I did, although not, I have to say, not a huge part, but, you know, occasionally having short 24-hour fasts. And that worked quite well and wasn't particularly difficult. I think anything over 24 for me doesn't work, but 24 worked quite well. So, again, that was another kind of psychological thing I had to overcome, because before I started posting, I was reading the forum and reading about all this ESE stuff. I thought, what is this? You know, this is really, really unusual. And having to overcome my own ideas about it, preconceptions about it. And that was very helpful. And I think it's, again, just trying to be a bit more open-minded to different kinds of approaches to eating and to looking at the way you eat and the kind of things you eat. Because I think I had very set ideas, and lots of people I know have very set ideas about what you should eat and how much you should eat. And I think you just have to learn to open your mind a bit more to different ways. And I think it will benefit you in the long run anyway. You just become more flexible about your approach to it all, really.
And then, okay, so there's a lot of stuff in there. So what'd you learn about yourself and about the process? Both from a diet and an exercise tip. I guess we never got into training. Did you just do the regular VI workouts?
Yeah, I did. I'd started VI in about March, so I finished the first phase of VI about halfway through the contest, and I did 3 of the regular workouts and then kind of 3 cardio, kind of steady state or high intensive interval training every week. Not a huge amount of cardio. And when I got hold of the specializations, I started adding those in as well, kind of shoulder or back or glute work, that kind of thing. So I finished VI about halfway through the contest, and then I started to mix it up afterwards with kind of circuits and specializations until the contest ended, and now I'm on phase two of the VI workout. So that's what I did for the workouts. What I did learn about the workouts, and this was a huge revelation to me actually, was how much heavier I can lift and was able to lift. Before VI, I'd done a huge amount of endurance work and lots of kind of low weight, high rep type stuff, you know, the kind of 3 pound pink dumbbell type stuff, which was fine, but it wasn't doing anything in terms of muscle building. It was just endurance work. So what I did learn was that I could lift so much heavier. I mean, it was quite expensive, really, because I work out at home, so I ended up buying lots of plates, and I had a weighted vest, I bought a big kettlebell. But it was amazing to me to actually develop strength so quickly, and it was amazing how much I could lift in comparison to before. And it was really, it's a cliche, but it was very empowering to actually realize you can actually lift heavy weights, and a lot of them. And that was fantastic. So that was really a real revelation to me that heavy weights, I could do it. It worked, and it didn't cause the infamous bulking.
I was just gonna say that. And judging by your pictures, there it doesn't bulk you. It just makes you look like tight and strong, and just it's the way you're supposed to look. I mean, yeah. You got to lift heavy weights.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the one thing that I learned, and that I know I will never go back now to previous approaches, because you can see it works. I mean, you can see it works on all the people who entered the contest, all the pictures, all the previous winners. And they were so inspiring, because you could see, I mean, people like Denise, for example, Naomi Kim, you know, all these people who lift so heavy, and they look so lean and defined, and there isn't anything that you would call bulk at all. They just look amazing, and you can see that it works. You can see it, and it's just fantastic. So that was a huge revelation to me, that you didn't need the 3 pound, you know, 50 rep kind of workouts to actually get results. That was great.
Were you I don't know what the word is. Can you see yourself getting, I don't want to say addicted, but drawn to being able to lift heavier? Or do you know, like, I don't know if it scares some people, like, oh God, that I'm lifting too much, or do you kind of like the idea of being strong?
I actually really, really like it. It's funny, I was in, at the weekend, I was in a gym for the first time in a long time, and I was watching in the mirror that I was lifting these dumbbells. I was doing some shoulder press, I think, and I could see in the mirror this muscle definition in these shoulders, and I thought, that's me, that's amazing, you know, and that you've got someone with a relatively small waist but still quite muscly, and I thought, I actually look strong. And it was great, and I can see it being a very addicting thing in a good way, because you do feel incredibly powerful. And I think what is good about the Venus workouts is that sense of progression, which I never had before. I used to kind of program hop and skip around and do this, do that, but there was never any progression. And for the first time, you have 12 weeks of something, for me anyway, that where you have kind of built-in progression, and you can get heavier and you can see yourself progressing. And I think that's really important. Otherwise, you just get so bored and fed up, and you're not achieving anything. And I think just feeling stronger in your everyday life is fantastic. You know, being able to lift stuff and you know, it just makes everyday life better as well. So, yeah.
I don't know how it got this way, but it's been a huge disservice to women in general who have the effort, have the intention, and are going to put the effort into some kind of training, to have them be so misdirected in what they should be doing. Mm. Like you said, it's just lots of endurance, lots of cardio, a bunch of abs. So instead you end up with skinny, sort of weak-looking limbs and a blocky midsection. Mm. And that's kind of what par for the course has been for women for decades now. And it's such a disservice. Because bunch of women are going to go out there and put their effort into that and end up with a physique they just don't like.
Well, this is what happened to me. I mean, I had a phase in my life where I was running a lot, which was fine. But again, I was really skinny, really skinny. I should post pictures. With this kind of just blocky waist. And there was no waist. I was just sort of straight. And it just didn't look strong. I wasn't particularly fit. I was tired. You know, it was doing me no good whatsoever. I was just pounding the streets, you know, mile after mile after mile. And again, I saw a woman in the gym this weekend, and I mean, she looked great. She looked fantastic, but she went straight to the cardio machine, one cardio machine, another cardio machine, another cardio machine, then she went. And I thought, it's such a shame that actually you'd probably enjoy it a lot more and get more out of it if lifted more weights. But I think there is still a huge kind of cultural thing about women and weights, that you mustn't get too muscly and you mustn't lift heavy. And it's a real shame, particularly in Britain, I think. It's the ideal is still skinny, no muscle. And I think even in basic health terms, never mind sort of aesthetic, how you look terms, it just in health terms, it's just not great for you. I think it's everyone needs to lift heavy. But, you know, I think you're fighting a lot of cultural attitudes. And I think, you know, for a lot of women, they're coming up with, you know, they're faced with people who are saying these things to them. And it's difficult, really.
So in Britain, is it rare for women to be embracing the concept of lifting weights and being strong and that kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, I think it's becoming more acceptable. I mean, kettlebells are taking more of a hold in Britain, which is great. But the real, in Britain, it's still the Zumba, the cardio, the running, and it's the skinny, skinny, skinny Pilates yoga type body. And, you know, our media is awful here, but, you know, whenever you get a picture of Madonna or anybody even vaguely muscled, it's, oh, have they gone too far? Cameron Diaz, has she gone too far? And so you're kind of fighting this perception that muscle is bad. And the ideal is still skinny, skinny, skinny. And it's a real shame. And
now, I've wondered about that because based on our research and based on the ratios, it would suggest that it's innate in humans to recognize a figure that just looks nicer. Mm. So I'm wondering where the nature versus nurture argument comes up. Like if you're immersed in a society that holds a different ideal up, but it seems as though we're genetically imprinted to just recognize a more VI figure as just what's more aesthetically pleasing. Mm. To me, that seems like there's a built-in conflict there. Like how can you look at Cameron Diaz or Jessica Biel or any of these celebrities who are in really good shape and are muscled and it just looks good? I don't see how any media can override the innate like look of that, and just how can you look at that and be like, that's wrong? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think we have such a bizarre cultural attitude now in that you've got these kind of emphasis on the skinny still, whilst you've got the vast majority of the population, certainly in Britain anyway, heading towards the kind of obesity route. And I think we've just got this utterly bizarre contradictory attitudes towards weight loss and bodies and the whole perception and media portrayal of it, and it's just completely screwed up. It's very bizarre. I totally don't understand it. But,
yeah, the pendulum's on either side. It's
the
population's moving towards obesity, which clearly isn't the goal, but then maybe there's a portrayal of a very skinny goal, but that's not it either. It's well, I think it's AI and VI somewhere in the middle, but it's like they haven't embraced it yet.
No, not at all. It's very strange.
Huh. Well, okay. So then I'm looking at your pictures and they're awesome. So what did you think when you saw? Oh, and your after pictures. You got to tell people what you did there because they look great.
Oh yeah, the pictures. Well, I have to say thanks to Alicia and also Marley for just really the tips about pictures and about posing and the whole thing. But I mean, one thing I would say is don't take it too seriously. What we did was we just had fun with it, and we were just playing around with the poses and the lighting. And so I think that's one thing I would say is have fun with it and don't get too hung up and too nervous about it. It is fun and it's enjoyable. And, you know, I think the results come through with the pictures that I've seen of other people, you know, that they enjoyed the process. But having said that, I would say, do a bit of preparation, do a bit of practice, practice the posing, practice with your lighting, mess about, practice with the makeup, the whole thing. Listen to, you know, Alicia's podcast, look at Marley's posing. That all really helps just get you in the frame of mind to do it. And then just go for it, play around with shoes, bikinis, you know, just don't treat it too seriously. Otherwise, you'll be incredibly stiff. And my first pictures were really, really stiff. And I think you have to just kind of loosen up and enjoy it. And it's fun. It's something that's for you, that's fun, that's enjoyable, that you can say that you did. And I think also you can you can be at VI and not look a kind of stereotypical fitness model or whatever. If you look at all the pictures that have just gone online, all the 12 pictures, everyone is different. And I think sometimes people have in their heads a picture of a fitness contest or a fitness contestant that it doesn't have to be like that. You can do it in your own kind of way. And so I think it was really nice that all 12 pictures were such different kinds of people and different looks. And I think that's really important for people to just do it their own way as well. So you know, you can do the posing and the makeup and the hair and the whole thing, but just have fun with it. I think that.
Yeah, it's not like you're all going to turn into clones of each other.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have their own VI look. It's same thing on the guy's side.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of, you can have identical measurements and identical height and you'll look completely, you just have your own look. The point is your silhouette it'll be similar, but it's still yours. And that's because a circumference still doesn't tell us about, this is something me and Pilon have been working on. Circumferences still don't tell us about width or depth. So you and 10 other girls can have the exact same VI at the same height, but your width and depth can be different. So one girl can be a little bit wider from the front angle, another girl can be a little bit thicker, deeper from like the front back, and with the same measurements. So that means in a three-dimensional, like if you kind of did a twirl, you've the parts that make up your measurements are just going to be sitting differently. And that's, you know, that's why we don't really have a hard and fast concept about the hips, because some girls are just hippier than others and it all looks good regardless. So some people are just slimmer hip and some people are just a bit bigger hip. All of it revolves around getting the waist close to or at VI, and then the rest of it all of it works off of the waist. But yeah, so we've got actually a set of huge calipers that we're using they're actually tree calipers for measuring the width of a tree. And we measure our own body's width and depth, and anybody that comes to our gym, we're starting to gather information on it. And so like me, Brad, and Brian Chung we're very close in size, but we all have different widths and depths. But we're all within like an inch or at golden. And when you stand us next to each other, the human eye can pick it out right away, the fact that we all look different. But it's hard to tell what it is because our circumferences are really close and our body fats are really close. So when you see the three of us like at the pool or something, you're like, well, they're definitely different. But when you measure us, you're like, well, but their measurements are so close. But then, like circumference measurements. But then when you put the calipers on us, Brian's actually, I think, wider than I am. But I'm thicker than he is, like front to back.
Yeah.
And then you get a little bit more information about what's really going on. So I guess I'm just long-windedly expanding on the point that everyone's VI is theirs, and it's going to be unique.
Well, what's important about that, I think, is the idea that you can't really compare yourself to anybody else. And I think this has been my big mistake in the past, that I've had pictures of somebody, and I've thought, oh, I want to look like that. But you can't even compare yourself to one of the other girls on the forum, because everyone is different, as you say, more hippie or more shoulders or whatever. And you will look very different, even if you're at BI. And I think that was a real problem for me, that you know, trying to compare yourself to other people. And I think you have to really fight that and resist that. I think it's a very human thing to do. I mean, everyone does it. But it's really important to try and resist that, because you can only, as I know you keep saying this, you can only compare yourself to yourself and just do the best you can do within your own sort of limitations or potential or whatever.
Well, I guess the only way to really, I suppose what you'd need to do is look through all the different girls, and if at all you're going to pick a model, pick the one who looks the most like you. Not their facial features, but whose body seems very much like yours.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to do it. If you're going to at all have a sort of, like, I want to look like that person. I mean, like we just said, there's so many girls who, they just have their own look. So, if there's one that looks similar, and be honest with yourself, you can't just choose to look like one girl if you just don't look like her. So it's sort of, you got to set your body image goal, target model, whoever it is. If it's not your own body, it's got to be someone who's very similar to your look and shape. And then at least that way you can have a rough idea of what you think you might look like as you approach it. Again, you're not going to look exactly the same, but you're... it stands to reason that that's closer to what you'll look like. So.
Yeah, I think that's true, because, I mean, someone like me, I mean, I'm 5'8", and I have big hands, I have big feet, you know, I have big wrists, I'm not a small person, I'm never going to look like one of the smaller girls, and they're never going to look like me, and we're just different, and so you have to, you're right, you have to find somebody who's nearest in kind of build, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, and like we said, there's so many different, everyone's got their own look. I'm sure people can find at least one person that looks... Mm-hmm. That they can honestly say is like, that's more like my body type. And then that's kind of the way to model yourself. So I guess compare yourself to yourself or pick a model target that's really close to how you think you're going to look or how you do look. And that takes a little bit of – it's hard, right? It's hard to be objective about yourself. I did an interview with Jason Gottlieb, but you guys – I mean, you'll all be able to listen to it when it goes up. And he said that – and I think you might have – you sort of alluded to this when you saw your pictures – he said that he can't tell when he looked in the mirror if he's getting anywhere, so he just had to take pictures. And the only time he could ever be objective about himself at all is looking at a picture.
Yeah.
And he's just like, for some reason, putting that one little barrier between the live look in the mirror versus the picture was the only way he could actually tell if he's getting anywhere.
Yeah, I think that is such good advice, and I think it really is helpful. And you can absolutely tell, and it's the kind of... I mean, even when you look at a picture, you're not completely objective, but it's more objective than anything else, I think. And I think it is a really good way to see how far you've come, especially if you take them weekly. Then you've got this whole kind of this data on how you've progressed, and it is amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just on a day-to-day basis, since you see yourself so often, you can trick yourself. You can think that you've gotten nowhere.
Well, I'll give you an example. I've got a full-length mirror. And I was looking in this full-length mirror thinking, oh, God, I look terrible. My legs, oh, my God. And I realized the mirror was on an angle. So all these weeks I've been looking at myself, and it had foreshortened my legs by about 3 inches and made them about 3 inches wider. So, you know, you can't even presume that your mirror is an objective measure at all.
That's a really good point. The mirror in our gym is just a cheap little one we picked up at Walmart just because our gym's like there's no mirrors at all.
Yeah.
And it's warped like crazy. So like depending what part of the mirror you're looking at, you're either like really like long and lean, or you're like kind of short and fat. And the mirror itself isn't accurate at all. So it's...
I had weeks of thinking I was short and fat. What's going on?
It's just a bad mirror. So yeah. Oh, and I think our gym, I've had a few girls tell me that our gym has, quote, vanity mirrors in the women's only section. And now I've never seen them because I'm not allowed in that area. But she was looking at herself in the mirror, and in the women's section, she always seems taller and leaner and thinner. And she's like, I look way better down here. And then she looked at the reflection of the clock in the mirror, and instead of being round, it was a stretched oval, like vertical. And so she's like... oh my God, these mirrors are like stretch us vertically on purpose.
It's cheated her, yeah.
Yeah, well, and then it just makes everybody like, it justifies the amount of money they're paying for the gym and training because you look thinner in that section.
I quite like that mirror. That sounds good.
Yeah, so I mean, if you know, it's just kind of, you can't necessarily trust mirrors because you don't really know what you're seeing. But a camera gets exactly what you are. So pictures about as close as it can get.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so, well, I mean, we've gone over what you learned and the barriers. So what's your message to the Venus community?
Well, I've mentioned pictures, which I think is the biggest thing, because, as I say, I moaned and moaned that nothing was changing, but the pictures will tell you and show you things are. So I won't go through that again. But I think really the expect and accept thing, I think, is really a really good message, actually. So thanks to Eric for that, because it is hard, expect it to be hard. But just kind of get in, do it, and get out. You know, kind of expect it's going to be hard and accept that it is, but that you can do it. And just what everybody says about consistency, and it's a tired message and people are sick of hearing it, but it is true. You just have to keep going, keep swimming, keep at it, even if it's difficult, even if you have bad days, just keep going. And also realize you can do more than you think. You can lift heavier than you think. You can keep going and you can keep progressing. And I think people get discouraged fairly early on because it is difficult, or more difficult than they might have thought. And so I'd say just try and keep going. And I think the biggest part of keeping going is be part of the forum, because I would have given up a long time ago. because people kept saying to me, no, you'll see some changes, you just got to keep going, be more patient, stop moaning, get on with it, keep lifting. What is it Denise says, lift hard, lift often, and that is it, you know. And I think the forum will really give you a kick up the backside when you need it, it will give you support when you need it, but it will keep you going, and you will get really good, constructive, supportive advice. And we're all going through the same thing, and we all have the same problems. None of us is a snowflake in that sense, you know, that we all have similarities. So my biggest advice to people who are picking up the air now is really get involved, because people are so helpful and so supportive and will give you no BS advice. You know, they won't sugarcoat it. They will tell you, you know, what the deal is. And that's been really, really refreshing, I think. I think also, be honest with yourself and try and get to know yourself. What is your approach to food? What are your triggers? What are your kind of psychological weak points? And people will help you kind of talk through that on the blogs if that's the way you want to go. I mean, you don't have to, but I think kind of getting to grips with the emotional side of the process is helpful, and kind of trying to sort of get to know yourself a bit more, which sounds a bit kind of pop psychology, but I think it helps. And I think you have to also accept that there is a huge psychological component to this that you have to deal with and face up to, really. So I think that's what I would say. So I mean, that sounds very deep, and you don't have to go that deep, but I think it can help you if you sort of have a long, hard look at what you're doing with the help of the forum. I think that's really helpful.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anything left to be said. I think that's a good way to leave this one off.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for being on the call, Susie. That was great.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. So for Susie McKenzie, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Venus Index podcast.